I think this feedback culture that we kind of had from the beginning was really what got us our first business angel investments.
Welcome to The Growth Show. What keeps us driving is what drives you further. This is your hosts, Sebastian Kunz
and Sarah Kaya.
So Robin, we know each other for a very long time now, but for folks out there who don't know you yet, who are you and what drives you day by day?
So first of all, great to be here. I'm Robin. I'm one of the co-founders of Eat Clever, where we deliver healthy food in 70 cities throughout Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and just recently the UK. Maybe a little more to my backstory. I founded my first company when I was 15. It was a couponing platform where you could find free stuff that you could order. And I built that platform together with a friend. We had it for nearly 7 years running, and then sold it in 2014 to a competitor. I studied business psychology because I was always very interested in how people act and what drives the decisions of people. Yeah, I guess that's kind of my backstory a little bit.
So if you connect the dots, growth and yourself, how would you describe it?
I think there's two types of growth. On the one hand, you've got, well, personal growth, meaning that you grow yourself, your skills, and also the way you look at challenges in a way. And then on the other hand, you've got the more material growth in a way that is more visible to other people. I think personal growth is something which is very important for me. So looking back at challenges I may have had when I was 15, or even when starting Eat Clever just 4 years ago, looking back at them now, it's like, why was that a problem or a challenge for us? Because if I look at it now, it's something which is as simple as spreading butter onto your piece of toast. I think the personal growth is just really important to me. So I always try to look for things where I can improve myself. So I mean, the reason why I went to to the event where I met my co-founders, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later, was that I wasn't satisfied with the amount I was learning at university. So I was, I remember reflecting on the university, and I noticed that there was no practical things going on at university. So it was always just theory being passed on to me, and I wanted to experience how the world works in a way. So because of that, I decided to then go to a startup event. And because of that, I decided, okay, I need to connect more with people. So that was another step for personal growth for me to get out and talk to people you don't know and connect with those people and make sure that you can get something out of these conversations that you have with the people. And then this goes on, well, always goes on, of course. So once we founded Eat Clever, one of the first things was, well, after the bootstrapping phase that we had, we hired our first employees. And at that point, it was the same thing for me. I had no idea how to lead a team. And to be honest, before founding Eat Clever, I never thought that a part of founding is actually learning to, or that you need to know how to lead a team in order to successfully found a company. And so that was another step where I learned loads, made some mistakes as well. Luckily, nothing too bad. And yeah, so I think it's always important to look at the challenge that you have and then in the next step, see how you can manage them. And I think that's really important for personal growth. And then on the other hand, of course, you've got the growth that is more visible to other people, which means that you get more successful in a way. So, I mean, in the beginning, when we started Eat Clever, it was I mean, I had a few people who were studying with me who knew about what we were doing, but it was everybody kind of looked down on it a little bit. Not in a, like, they weren't being negative, but they were thinking like, oh yeah, that's like a hobby project that he has and he's working on that, and we'll see in half a year, then he'll be doing something else. And I think at some point it's kind of weird, because you have loads of milestones that you reach yourself, or that you feel that you've reached, and then there's certain points during that time where it's actually visible to other people. So one of the examples I had was just a few months ago. We were already in 60 cities throughout Germany, and we got nominated for Forbes 30 Under 30 for Europe. And at that point, loads of people like sent me messages and so on, saying, wow, congratulations for the success and so on. And for me, it was kind of, I remember I woke up, checked my emails, and saw the email that they placed me on the list. And to me, it was like, okay, all right, so let's go to work and get started for the day. So it really wasn't something where I personally saw a lot of growth, but the visibility of that growth in a way was much higher than of other things. So it's always kind of a mix in a way.
But was that, well, first of all, congratulations to the nomination. Was that something that you planned, that you're going to be on that list sooner or later? Or was that like a lucky coincidence?
It was quite a lucky coincidence. So I really was. I woke up and checked my phone, and I saw an email in my... Actually, they sent out two emails. And the first email I got was like a follow-up email. And I opened it and I was like, what are they talking about? I don't understand this email. And then the next email I read was actually the congratulations, you've been put onto the Forbes Under 30 list. So yeah, but that was really just, I think we were nominated by someone, and then we're lucky enough to.
Very, very cool. I mean, being on Forbes 30 Under 30, let's circle back a bit. The entire idea of Eat Clever started during a hackathon, or like a startup weekend here in Hamburg. What was the initial idea, and why did you decide to go to the startup weekend? And what was the idea behind this? I mean, this is already almost 5 years ago. Lots of things have changed. So what was the first idea?
Yeah, so actually I met my co-founders at this startup weekend that was in 2012, so it's actually 7 years ago, even longer. We didn't know each other before that event, and during that event we worked on a platform for food delivery, which had some basic features of Yelp in a way. So you could review individual dishes, you could upload photos for an individual dish, and you could even search for all of the dishes that have mushrooms in the city that you're looking for, and you could find it across all the delivery services that are there. Yeah, so that was the initial idea that we worked on during that startup weekend, and we actually went ahead and founded that company, went live, got a few orders, and got a little traction. But in the end, we noticed that it wasn't working how it should. So we noticed we had some nice features on our website, and it was cool to be able to see actual photos of the food that you're ordering. But it was kind of a gimmick. So it wasn't we weren't solving a problem that the other players in the food delivery market weren't solving. So it was kind of, people didn't use the product. But what we did notice during that time, so I spent a lot of my time in the individual restaurants taking photos, because you've got the chicken egg problem. On the one hand, you want users. On the other hand, you need to have content for the users. So I was standing in one of the restaurant kitchens for multiple days. But this one day I was standing there, and during, I think, 8 hours that I was there, I got like 10 photos. So there was like really not enough going on. And I was just, so every order that was coming through, I was taking a photo of it in order to have it for our platform, but we really weren't getting enough input. So I noticed that they weren't really using their capacities, but people were always on their phones playing games, waiting for the next order, basically getting paid but not actually working. So the next step was to, then we kind of thought, how can we solve this problem? And on the other hand, how can we actually solve a problem on the consumer side? Because having a photo of a product is nice, and we still have that with eClever. So we actually, every photo that you see on our menu is a photo of a real dish. So it's not typical food photography where ice cream is actually mashed potatoes or something. But it's actually the real food that you're seeing. Yeah, we had those two sides that had problems, and we decided to go ahead and solve both these problems. So on the one hand, we decided to go into the healthy food space, because at that time, nobody was doing anything healthy. I remember a big issue was that when we talked to people, when we got feedback from people, it was often like, yeah, but do you really think that people want to order healthy food? Because people order food, then they want a pizza. And at that point, we still had to convince people that healthy food delivery is a thing that people want. And I guess times have really changed since then, because now if I pitch what we do to someone, it's immediately clear that healthy food, of course, there's a market, there's a demand for that. And then the other side, which is, I guess, the more interesting part in a way, is the restaurant part. Because when we decided to solve a problem with healthy food, I mean, we could have gone ahead and said, okay, we'll create our own restaurant, we'll open our own restaurant, get some orders in, and basically grow naturally in a traditional way. But we thought, hey, let's use the capacities that these restaurants have that they're not using right now. So they've got kitchen space not being used. They've got employees standing around not doing anything. Yeah, that was basically we were sitting in my dorm for the university and had a brainstorming session what to do, because we noticed that there wasn't enough traction on the old project. And yeah, then the idea came to Marco, one of my co-founders, to say, hey, let's use their capacities, give them the whole package, so they only need to take care of preparing the food and delivering it to the end consumer. So yeah, that's how it started.
So besides the chicken egg problem you had in the beginning, what were your biggest challenges for the sort of overnight success you have today?
I mean, there's loads. It's difficult to pinpoint individual ones. In the beginning, it's all about getting customers. I remember, I guess, like probably the first 100 or 200 customers, I knew them all by name. So if I actually had an alert on my phone, so every time we got a new order in, I had like this ka-ching. And at that, I mean, that wasn't too often. That was like twice a day or something. So, and then every time I looked at the order and checked, who is it ordering? Is it the same person ordering again? Is it a new customer? But actually getting customers was probably, especially in the beginning, one of the hardest things to do, because, well, we didn't really know how to do it. And on the other hand, we had competition that was spending millions on marketing. I mean, the German food delivery market is a market that, I mean, up until recently, where Takeaway has bought up the German sites of Delivery Hero. At that time, they were in full battle mode and launching new platforms. So I think at the beginning, Lieferando was actually independent of Takeaway still. And so they were all pushing huge marketing budgets into the market, and we were there without any funding trying to get people to order from us. So we kind of went the personal route in the beginning. So we went to loads of events in Hamburg and just told every person we met about what we're doing and told them, hey, you should order from us, take a look. Did a lot of caterings and so on to just get people to try our food, notice that it's great food, and then they would later on become customers and order again. On the other hand, we tried loads of things online as well. I remember I'm still in probably 100 Facebook groups of university courses that I'm not in, but I asked to join at that time just to be able to, I mean, in a way, spam into these these groups. We did it in a kind of smart way. So what we did was we asked those people for feedback, saying, hey, we're students. We didn't say that we're students from that faculty. We just said, hey, we're students. We just launched this new company. Do you have some feedback for us? So that's kind of what we did in the beginning to get a lot of people. We commented a lot in blogs. We did some, I mean, at that time that was pretty easy still. We did some influencer marketing. So when we launched in Hanover, for example, we actually just wrote to all the bloggers we could find in Hanover and actually got quite a few blog posts from these people, because at that time, I mean, now it's totally simple. Everybody knows that that's a marketing channel, but at that time it was pretty new. So, and they were open to that, and even without us paying them anything. So the only thing that they got from us was the free food, and they did some awesome posts about what we're doing and some background story as well. So yeah, I think in the beginning it was just loads of trying out, and I mean, at sometimes it really hurt. I mean, when we first spent our first Facebook advertising budgets, and I remember still all our own money, and we were all kind of still in the student mindset. So I hadn't been working for a long time before that or anything, so I didn't have too much money to spare. Like, most of the money I had was from selling the previous company. Yeah, so it really hurt when I looked into the Facebook ads manager and saw like €300 for one conversion. I mean, that hurt like so much, because it was like €300 and they're just gone for one person ordering. Yeah, but in the end, we kind of, every time we tried something, we tried to learn some lessons from that and improve on those channels. And luckily now we've got a marketing team that takes care of making sure that we get new customers and that our customers are happy. And so it's not me posting in Facebook groups anymore.
You just mentioned influencer marketing. I mean, that's a dream back in the days where you didn't even need to pay them and they make advertising for you. I think the story is very different now. If you look back, what made you reach the milestones that you set to yourself? What made you achieve the growth? Like, you mentioned the first 100, 200 customers, you knew them by name. What about the first 1,000, first 500,000? How did you manage to get that? I mean, posting into Facebook groups is not going to get you 500,000 customers.
True. I think there were a lot of things that we were doing along the way. There wasn't this big plan. This is how our marketing is going to look at that time, because we didn't know, and we had to develop that plan. I mean, now again, we do have it. But at that point, it wasn't that we knew, okay, next month we're going to make this and that revenue, we're going to have these customers. It was just trying new things and hoping that they would be better than what you were doing before. So yeah, that did help us. I remember one of our mentors, he always said, you only need 100 orders a day. And I remember thinking, yeah, that's easy to say, but how are we going to reach that? And yeah, at some point we actually did reach that milestone. And I think one of the big benefits was that we had, and still have, of course, a very big focus on customer support, customer feedback and so on. So one of the things we did in the beginning was we called each customer. So like the afternoon after the day before, we would call all the customers that ordered the day before and ask them for their feedback and ask them if they had any improvements, how we should do something differently. And then at some point we introduced recyclable packaging, and I sent like 100 emails to customers manually and asked them, how do you like our new packaging? And got some feedback, improved on that. And I think this feedback culture that we kind of had from the beginning was really what got us our first business angel investment. So one of our good customers at that time was Tarek Müller, the founder of About You. So he kept ordering again and again and didn't really reply to us asking whether he'd be interested in investing. So, but he kept on ordering like 3-4 times a week. So really a heavy user. And during these feedback calls, we also called him, my co-founder Mohamed. He he called Tarek, and then he asked for some feedback, and then they kind of got into talking about a potential investment, and then things went really quickly and he decided to invest in us. And I mean, that of course helped us grow a lot, because then we actually had a marketing budget to try out new things, because at that point we had spent all our savings. We were basically doing caterings where we were standing next to the food and doing the service as well in order to kind of get a profit out of the whole thing. Yeah, so that was kind of the point where we actually had the possibility to try a little more and professionalize it in a way.
Even though I think the caterings were also amazing, because you did get directly feedback from the people, right? I mean, you were always like feedback oriented, and this was one of the great things you always did. And I mean, it even led to one of your investors.
Yeah, definitely. That's, the caterings were really great, because, I mean, we had events where we had, I think, nearly 200 people, and all of them were eating our food. And then we had a flyer, of course, next to the food saying, hey, you can also order this food with a coupon, in order to track whether the people were actually coming from that or not. And so that was a great way.
So speaking of marketing of the old days, and I know you guys were always creative on marketing, what kind of a crazy marketing stunt did you try to promote your Eat Clever in general?
Well, apart from the ones I've already told a little about, I think the craziest one we did was we actually set up a Tinder profile. And so that was, again, just the time when Tinder was just getting bigger, and there weren't any Tinder bots out at that time, so I kind of installed Tinder onto an Android emulator on my PC, and then set up a profile where we, instead of having photos of people, we had like treat yourself today or something as a text, and then if you swiped to the next photos, you could see photos of our food, and then in the description we did some advertising.
How many matches did you get?
It was ridiculous.
Really?
It was really ridiculous for both genders too. I mean, there were more matches when we had a female profile. That goes to say something. But to be honest, I don't really know why, because there wasn't anything that you were getting out of matching us. But I think a lot of people were just swiping right all the time in order to get the most amount of matches. But that was good for us, because of that, then they had got the It's a Match or screen that you get, and looked at our profile again and saw it. And we got quite a lot of messages saying, hey, really great marketing and so on. And I remember so another point where we collect feedback is when a customer orders on our site, at the end of the order, we ask him, where do you know us from? Pretty standard, but we actually had Tinder on there as an option, and we did get quite a lot of people actually selecting Tinder from that. So I think that was the craziest one. Apart from that, I mean, we did some things in hindsight where you'd think, why did we even try that? So it was like, we did a mulled wine, typical German Christmas drink. So we decided to set up a stand at my university and sell this wine, and as well sell some wraps on the sides. I mean, we were able to pay off the costs for the stand and also for the ingredients, but we didn't get any customers from that, because I mean, on the one hand, students don't have that much money anyway, and then on the other hand, we weren't selling them our product, we were selling them wine.
Yeah.
Which just doesn't make sense. So you have those pretty unsuccessful attempts that you do at marketing, but then you have some like Tinder, for example, which worked really well. And well, at some point our account got closed down, I guess because we got too many likes or too many matches. And I think at that point also Tinder changed their policies a little concerning advertising on their app. So then we had to find something new.
So you were not just upgraded to a VIP on Tinder?
Sadly not.
So just out of curiosity, what did the people see there? What was the image? Because like Tinder usually works visually. So what did the people actually see?
Yeah, so the first image was really just text. It was just something, yeah, like treat yourself or be the best person you can be or something motivational, something kind of related to Tinder. So make sure your body is attractive to your potential matches or something. Something like that to catch the people, to get them looking at the profile, click on the profile. And then the other things were just really photos of our food because, I mean, food is something that you can really sell through visual aspect. So that's always been like from the start, because we kind of came from that background, we always had, I would like to think, very, very good and very tasty looking photos of our food. So, yeah, that worked.
Cool. Robin, you said that you, in the beginning, you called each customer every day. Now you have some more customers. So which strategies do you follow to keep the customers happy? Because from what you're saying and what it sounds like, you really put the customers in the center of your efforts.
Yeah, well, calling every customer isn't possible anymore, sadly, or we'd have to basically have a full office of people just calling the customers for their feedback. And I guess quite a few customers would be pretty annoyed because they'd get called very often. I mean, of course, you kind of have to evolve with your company and you can't keep doing the same things. So, of course, yeah, customer feedback is still really important to us. So on the one hand, we just collect feedback from customers. Once they've ordered, sometimes we might even incentivize it with a coupon or something. And then, of course, we also look at the data because now we have so many orders, so many data points that we can actually look at the data and say, hey, this dish is performing really well in this city. This dish is performing really well in this city, and this dish isn't as performing as well, even though the city right next to it has it performing really well. So that also helps us to do our quality management. So quality management is a really big thing for us. At the beginning, of course, we also did it just, well, if a customer we called up said something was wrong, then we talked to the restaurant or to the cooks and told them, hey, this one customer said that this and that was wrong. Yeah, so now it's more based on data, it's more quantitative in a way, and we have a dashboard for our partner management team who take care of all the relationships with the individual restaurants, and they've got a big dashboard where they can see for each restaurant all the different metrics that you have in order to see how well is that restaurant performing. Yeah. Cool.
So you also offer different meals in different cities in Germany?
No, we actually have a standardized menu. So every city, like we might have some small deviations, for example, drinks or desserts are something where we're not 100% consistent across Germany, but for the main dishes, we actually have a standardized menu. So we have customers who are ordering in Frankfurt one day and then they're in Hamburg because they've got an event there, and then in the evening at their hotel, they decide to order food again and some they order from us again. I mean, it's the McDonald's effect in a way. So with McDonald's, you go to Berlin, you know exactly what you're getting. And if you go to Munich the next day, you're still getting the same menu and also the same quality of food. So that's something that we also strive for with our menu.
What strategies did you so far follow to build a great relationship with your customers? I think it's even sort of a community at the end, at least with your recurring customers. And I believe to remember that back in the days, you were even delivering some food yourself just to like get feedback directly from the customers themselves.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is the fact of that you always need to learn, you always need to understand the whole process as well. So one thing that we've really developed within the last 5 years is processes, because now we're launching in the UK. It's very, I mean, there's a lot of things that you still need to take care of. And then I noticed, hey, like the last few launches that we had in Germany, I didn't have anything to do with those launches because we've got really good processes for that. But in order to have these processes, you need to fully understand how everything works. So you need to also understand, how does delivery work? What are the problems that you're facing when delivering food? So that means if you're delivering into the city center, you might not be able to find a parking space. And then you have the question, or you need to deliver into a pedestrian zone and you can't drive your car in there. So then you have to kind of, those are all the things that you might not think of initially, but that are really important in order to improve the process at every point where you can. Yeah, that's one thing we also did to get feedback from the customer and to see how everything works, was to actually deliver to our customers personally. We also did that when we were delivering to influencers, because then we could talk a little to them, give them some background information, learn a bit about them as well. Yeah.
You just mentioned the expansion to the UK. So you are right now Germany, Austria, Switzerland.
Yeah.
What made you decide to go to the UK? Is this a small step into the US market, or is this just to try something completely different?
We always, our vision was always to be global. That still is our vision. And of course, being a German company, the easiest step that we took was Austria, because it's also within the European Union. And it's got the euro and it's got the same language. So that was a quite easy step. We had to adjust a few things for our billing, had to change the menu a little because chicken isn't the same word as in Germany. And so there were a few things that we did have to change. But it was, to be honest, it was quite easy for us because our system is really scalable. And because of the scalability, the country isn't that much of an issue. Next step was Switzerland for us, which was a little more difficult because it's not within the EU. So you've got things like taxes, which are quite complicated. You've got, you have to get all the products that you send to the restaurants for customs. So that's also something which is kind of annoying. You need to declare everything, and it's just a topic that you have to, we didn't have to think about before, that we suddenly had to, yeah, work on. So, but then we were in the DACH region, and then we kind of thought, all right, we want to go the next step. We want to go to the next market. That was something that we really did. We'd been thinking about it for quite a while, but we launched our first store within the UK within 6 weeks of deciding to go to the UK.
That's quick.
We looked at all the European countries that you have. We also looked at some countries outside of the European Union. I mean, UK, at that point, we really, when we did our first round of sales in the UK, it was actually, the trip was planned until a date that, at that time when we booked the trip, we didn't know whether the UK would still be within the European Union at the time that Mohammed, who was doing the sales, was to leave the country. So that was quite interesting. But I think the UK is, I mean, it's a big market. That's something which really was something that made the UK interesting. They order quite a lot. They're quite convenience driven. And yeah, I mean, those were the main factors. Kind of factor which was a big question mark was the Brexit at that time. I mean, now it's been delayed until I think October 31st. Let's see what happens, because that might get a little interesting as well. But on the other hand, we've worked with or we are working with restaurants in Switzerland, which is a country which is also not in the European Union. That works perfectly, so I don't see a big problem with the Brexit. Yeah, it's just it's one of the biggest food delivery markets within Europe, so that kind of made sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So just for our audience has an understanding of the size of Eclever, just like, let's just say like two quick questions. How many people are today in your team?
So our team right now, we've got a team of 30 people working on improving Eat Clever all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was your last year's revenue, if you might share it?
Yeah, last year's revenue was, I believe, around 5 million. And for this year, we're aiming for double digits.
That's amazing.
Awesome. Cool. So you tried a lot of things worked. But if you have to pinpoint the biggest fuck up that you've done so far, do you have one thing, one project, one strategy that did not go as planned at all?
I think a really big fuck up was our first hiring process. because, I mean, I've told you a little bit about how our marketing worked back then. So our marketing was totally focused on influencers and social media. Our key metric was Facebook followers, or one of our key metrics. So we decided to employ, I think it was 5 people, all of them in marketing, and none in operations, none in customer support. They were all in marketing. And I mean, we got some really good advice before hiring these people. Tarek actually told us, for your first hires, make sure to hire working students. So just students who are working for you 10 to 20 hours a week. And that's what we did. And we got great people, no questions asked, but we just didn't have enough work from them on the one hand. And also we had a lot of other things that where we had a lot of work where they didn't have any skills. So kind of the team shrank a little bit after that. And then we managed to diversify with our teams. Then we hired our first full-time employees. And luckily we learned it right in the beginning to not just hire people blindly. Yeah, so I think that was quite a big fuck up in a way. I mean, there's been a few things where we were kind of naive, and sometimes we were lucky enough to actually have it work. At other points, we applied for an accelerator program, and we were basically, all three of us, we were fully confident that we were going to get into this accelerator program. And it was a really prominent program where you had like, I think, 600 startups applying for it for one term. And so we applied for it. We got invited to the final stage where there were just 20 startups left. And we were like, we were already looking for apartments and so on because it was in Amsterdam. We were already looking for apartments and everything. And then we went to, it was a whole week of a selection process where we pitched to mentors and so on. We were fully convinced that we were going to go there. And then, well, the jury basically selected the winners. We weren't part of it. And we were devastated because we had no idea what to do next. I think that was one of the points where we weren't sure if we could go on or how to go on because we didn't have any money left. And we basically, our goal of, because we had planned to then open our first store in Amsterdam while we were there and so on. So that all didn't work, but we were lucky enough to have a great mentor who then kind of picked us up and actually gave us free office space. And through that, he coached us a little bit on how to get back on track. And yeah, I think that was also something where it wasn't a typical fuck up because we didn't make a huge mistake, which then backfired on us. But it was just us being way too naive.
So if you look back, what did you learn? What would you do differently?
Always have a plan B. It's important to be optimistic, to think of things that can be and not think of things that can't be. But it's also really important to have a backup plan that you don't need to have it fully planned out, but to have kind of an idea of how things could go if something that you're kind of relying on to work doesn't work. So that you're not standing there and saying to yourself, oh God, what's going to happen now? But that you actually have an idea. And then of course you still, if something goes wrong, then you do still have to elaborate on this plan B, but you need to kind of have a faint vision of how that plan B can look.
Now, very, very helpful and interesting insights from your side, Robin. I mean, grow into a 30 people company that operates in 70 cities, not only Germany, Austria, Switzerland, also now the UK. with 5 million in revenues last year, planning on doubling this at least this year. Really enjoyed this year. What I liked a lot is that you said that you have to evolve with your company. You can't just do the same things over and over again. And I mean, being in touch with the first 100, 200, 300 customers makes sense. But once you get a couple of thousand, this just doesn't apply anymore. So I think you gave us great insights in changing the strategies and adopting in terms of how the company is moving and where it's headed. Also, I liked, I thought it was very funny when you mentioned that people looked not really down, but they made fun of you in the beginning. I guess this is also a certain satisfaction that you get out of this because you've made this work, and you've not only made this work, but you've made this work very successfully. And trial and error. I mean, a lot of people say that it's in every startup book out there. And it sounds so simple, but it's actually not, because I think many people are afraid to try because they're afraid to fail. Yeah. So it sounds like you've done everything right, even though you fucked up some things in the middle. And always have a plan B. That's something to keep in mind for sure. And we wish you all the best to achieve your vision to become global and keep up the success. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And to all the listeners, I hope you enjoyed what I had to say.